former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Competitive eating is the crucible through which greatness is born, and the evidence came before us this morning on the corner of Surf and Stillwell at Coney Island. Welcome in to this 4th of July edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No, I am not George Shea. Stormy Bonantoni with you and Adam Burke alongside in for Michael Lombardi today. This is my Super Bowl, the 4th of July hot dog eating contest in the books from Coney Island. How are we feeling, Adam?
Probably better than all the contestants are currently feeling, but it was, I gotta say, one of my favorite moments now working here at VSiN was watching how much you were into the hot dog contest.
Thank you. It's a highlight of my year.
You were on the edge of your seat.
Well, this was the first year on the men's side where we had true competition. It was neck and neck there for a moment. Congratulations to Patrick Bertoletti, massive underdog, plus 850. Cash those tickets, ladies and gentlemen. I do feel very much so for Jeffrey Esper, who always the bridesmaid, never the bride. This is the fourth straight competition now that he has finished runner-up in the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Even with the one Joey Jaws chestnut out of the race, he still couldn't get it done. He's getting up there. I know some people were fading him this week, despite him being an odds-on favorite because he was nearly 50 years old. But, you know, age ain't nothing but a number. I feel for him today.
Yeah, be better is all I can say. Be better. Eat more. I mean, look, I'm... You know, our producer Elliot Bowman came in and said that only 7% of the handle on Bertoletti over at DraftKings. And I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. I'm not sure how a guy who ate 21 pounds of grits in 10 minutes only had 7% of the handle.
Unbelievable. Is it not unbelievable?
Grits, it's a tough textural thing. So that's a difficult thing. Also here, it says 42 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in 10 minutes.
Yes.
It's kind of hard to get through one peanut butter and jelly sandwich sometimes.
These are like jaws and stomach athletes, you know?
Yeah.
They train for this. You make a pretty good... Joey Chestnut specifically, like, makes really good money in Major League Eating. And I guess now, obviously, unfortunately, because of his Impossible Foods deal, he couldn't be a part of this. But he's still doing another event later on this evening with Army soldiers, apparently raising money for military families. His goal in 5 minutes is to eat as many hot dogs as these guys did in 10. I doubt he'll probably be able to get to 58. But he's going to do that. And then him and Kobayashi are going to be doing that Netflix special later on Labor Day, which I think should be really fun. It's weird not seeing him on the stage today. I was a little sad.
I am astonished at how much you know about competitive eating and what's on the horizon. And
I'm into this.
If I would have known all of this, I would have had you write something for us over at vsin.com on this.
Well, yeah, you just, now you know.
Now
for
I know.
Future reference, now you
now
know.
Now I know for next year.
I'm your girl. I also looked up the caloric intake that was consumed. Evidently, we're looking at an approximate 290 calories per hot dog and bun. So for Bertoletti, who wins this thing, 16,820 calories consumed in 10 minutes.
I mean, look, the thing that's the most difficult for me about this is how they soak it in water. Like, I understand you have to do that from a, you know, to be able to stuff in as many as possible from a digestive standpoint. Also, the other question that I have, so... Like, you know, a lot of ballparks, right? They'll do dollar dog nights, right? So that's always a thing. But my wife, a colleague of hers, actually also worked at Progressive Field. And she said they start making the hot dogs for dollar dog night at like 4 a.m. And they just like have them in the warmers and they just roll them around the ballpark and all that. For this contest, like how long ago were these made? How long ago were they just like sitting there?
I don't know.
In a warmer?
Don't think about it.
Well, those are the things think about, okay?
Also, apparently, because, you know, last year there was a lot of controversy with the lightning strikes and the weather. It was super humid. A lot of the major league eaters had trouble in the conditions. It was hot dog eating weather today. Everything was perfect out there. Also, Mickey Sudo ends up winning a 10th mustard belt. It was a world record for the women's side. So she goes over 50, which I felt so silly. I'm like watching this thing and I'm legitimately clapping for her. So happy that she made the record. This has been a goal. Shout out her coming on Follow the Money yesterday.
Yeah.
And she talked about how much the I can't remember the name of the girl that was coming up behind her, who's like 100 pounds, 5 foot one, by the way, really, really tiny. She said how much that other girl had helped her raise her game. She needed to focus on her own eating style, not looking at that other girl. And she ended up breaking a world record today and getting the win. And she thought that she could. She said that she had over 50 in practice rounds on Follow the Money, but she hasn't done it in competition yet. And she had 51 today.
Well, I mean, look, you know, obviously good for her for setting a personal best and breaking the women's record. And also, as you mentioned, I mean, the conditions were optimal for hot dog eating. So maybe that had a lot to do with it.
Very important question for you. She, by the way, sorry, cashes as a minus 900 favorite. So you had to bet $900 to win your 100 back if you were betting on Mickey Sudo in this one. I feel like all of the people at the top were going over their props as well. Sudo's prop was set at just 40.5. She went over with about 2.5 minutes to spare there. But I wanted to show you this. So there's a thing up from hotdog.org that is evidently the proper hot dog etiquette, and I would argue that it's debatable, so shout out our crew here for making a graphic for this. Agree or disagree with hot dog etiquette according to hotdog.org. Do not use ketchup on a hot dog after the age of 18. Agree or disagree?
I don't like ketchup anyway, so
you don't?
I can agree with it. Yeah, I don't like ketchup. See, this is the difficult thing for me with hot dogs. I am not a condiment guy. I'm not going to put onions or relish or ketchup or mustard on them. I'm just not a condiment guy. Not a fan.
So then you're not putting anything on your hot dog at all? It's just plain dog?
I'm boring. Yeah. I'm a very boring person.
Well, the next thing says dress the dog, not the bun. When you watch other people make hot dogs,
I mean,
that's
obviously true, right?
I don't think that there should... See, the order of condiment application here, again, according to hotdog.org, wet condiments on the bottom, then the chunky condiments, then the shredded cheese, then the spices on top, all of this above the dog, which I don't think that there should be a problem with if you want to put ketchup on the bun first. Or mustard on the bun. I don't know why that would be an issue, why that would make people upset.
I mean, if you're eating it, you do whatever you want to do with it.
I think that would make it a little bit cleaner, probably, in the process of eating. You don't get mustard on your nose or anything.
Yeah, it'd make it easier to eat, especially because you're typically, like, you know, the way you're eating this, you run the very high risk of dripping something on yourself.
I certainly agree with the last one, though. Do not use utensils when eating a hot dog. Same thing with pizza. Like, why are we getting the knife and fork out for eating our pizza or a hot dog? That's a no-go for me.
If you have to eat a slice of pizza with a knife and a fork, the crust is not done properly.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. See, now we're talking. For me,
I guess, is deep dish an exception? Because it's just so hard to pick up.
But yeah, I think, well, and especially since you have to, like, cut it out of the, potentially, I'll give that a pass, but I don't eat deep dish enough to truly know and feel like I can give a proper answer on that statement.
I mean, I guess we have to put you on the record. Maybe you're already on the record with this. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
I understand the argument. I hate that you're asking me this question right now.
I had to.
I understand why people say yes, but I personally view hot dogs in a class of their own.
Is a hamburger?
It's like a roll. It's more of a roll.
Is a hamburger a sandwich?
I would say so, because when you go to a restaurant, that's in the, like, burgers and sandwiches are always in the same category.
Okay.
I
guess I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah. So I would say yes for a hamburger, but not for a hot dog. It's just different. It's like a bun is more of a hot dog bun specifically is more of like a roll type vibe than just two separate slices of bread like you have on a hamburger.
But you can have a sandwich on a roll, like a hoagie roll.
These questions are above my pay grade. For me personally, and I'm curious if you guys want to chime in on social media as well, tweet at us, at Skating Tripods, at Storm Bon and Tony, at VSIN Live. What is the proper way to eat a hot dog? Adam says plain. Don't put anything on it. I'm plain, but I'm not that plain. I do like ketchup. I like ketchup and mustard and cheese. As much cheese as humanly possible. This is another thing.
I guess I will say, in terms of condiment, I will eat chili dogs.
Okay. I think chili dogs are good.
Yeah.
So is that the best way? I don't know. I also want to know if you guys think that boiling hot dogs is sacrilegious. I personally, that's how I grew up eating them. I love boiled hot dogs, preferably the Oscar Mayer cheese injected hot dogs. Don't judge me. But, like, are you anti-boil?
No. To me, in our household, you boil first, and then you roll it around in a skillet with a little bit of, like, the cooking spray. And get a little bit of color on it on the outside.
Okay.
Well, I mean, obviously, the best hot dog is grilled, but
I don't know.
No?
I don't know. I think that you have to do it right. I don't like when it's super charred, and I feel like a lot of people
end
up blackening it a little too much for my liking.
So if you're gonna
that's probably because I was raised on them boiled, so it's like.
So maybe it's comparing you know, hot dogs and marshmallows, I guess. But do you like your marshmallows super charred?
No.
No? Okay.
No. Like, it really upsets me when I catch it on fire because I want it to be that perfect golden brown. That's another thing where I sit there way too long roasting a marshmallow to get it the perfect golden view. Like, that's how I run things.
I didn't realize your food takes were so strong.
It's actually the only thing I'm particularly opinionated on, to be honest. And we'll get into a little bit more of this later on in the show. Mike Somich is going to join us coming up after our first break. Tyler Shoemaker is going to stop by the desk. He has a very fun outfit today. Missing one thing, which we will discuss, of course. And in hour two, we'll have Josh Ingles join us, get some of his thoughts on what's a loaded Major League Baseball slate today. A lot of day baseball. Some games already going on here.
Yeah, and one of the games already over, actually. Nationals win 1-0 over the Mets. Jake Irvin, 8 innings, 1 hit, retired 17 straight to finish his start. And, you know, the Nationals are a team that's getting some pretty good starting pitching. Now they got James Wood up, their top prospect. So they're kind of interesting here in terms of the second half. I talked about them a few weeks ago on the Double Play podcast that I do with Dustin Sweetelson about 25-1, yes, to make the playoffs when they were priced the same as, like, the Rockies and the Marlins, who are both awful. I thought there was a little bit of value, a little bit of equity in that. They're on the outskirts of the wild card chase right now, but that's a team that's getting really, really good starting pitching. If they decide for whatever reason to be a buyer, I think the Nationals are kind of an interesting second half team.
Interesting. What time was first pitch for that? 8:30?
It was 8:05 for us.
Pacific.
So that was a very quick game.
Yeah.
That was, let's see here, 1 hour and 58 minutes.
And it was only 1-0.
1-0.
What a time to be alive. Okay, we're going to take our first time out of the day. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. But when we return, it's red, white, and shoe this 4th of July holiday as Tyler Shoemaker joins us on the desk. See, I appreciate the giggle.
That was good.
You think I'm embarrassing.
It wasn't as powerful as your intro, which was extremely well written.
Can't win them all. Thank you very much. Why Tyler is fading the defending Super Bowl champs in week one, plus a deep dive in the NFC South. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The wait is officially over. Our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide is out now. This guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season with in-depth profiles of each and every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and trends. You'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, of course, our experts are sharing their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need ahead of the year. Now, in order to get the guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we've got a steal of a deal. Usually $240 for the year. You can subscribe now for just $199 when you use our promo code Lombardi. And when you use that code, we're also throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do. In addition to the guide, you're getting the daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, and so much more. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. And again, use that promo code Lombardi to claim your discount. Alongside Adam Burke, who's in for Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome into the desk live in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino, Tyler Shoemaker, VSiN writer and creator of the T-Shoe Index, which is a ratings and projections system, which I do want to get into in a moment. But I cannot not address the elephant in the room here, which is that you have the outfit of all outfits for the 4th of July holiday. You've got the white suit jacket, the red pants. Missed opportunity on the blue shirt here, Tyler. What's happening?
Big time. This is an all-time fumble by me. I'm not going to lie. I had the realization last night at dinner. It occurred to me, tomorrow's 4th of July, red, white, and blue. I've got the white jacket and the red pants and did not come prepared with the blue shirt. So I absolutely dropped the ball on that.
We will forgive you, but I'm judging.
Well, I mean, the tough thing is if you're looking for a blue shirt down here on Fremont, it's probably not friendly enough to wear on air. So you were kind of stuck there.
Yeah, and I would like to keep my job. So yeah. I had to just settle for the black.
How is Vegas treating you so far other than me ridiculing you for your outfit?
It has been good. I've actually gotten several compliments on my outfits this week, which has been nice. So, you know, it hasn't been all bad wardrobe-wise for me. But, no, Vegas has been fun. We've had a really good time.
Yeah, I liked yesterday the purple jacket and yellow shirt was a nice combo.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the T-Shoe Index here, though, a little bit. Like, what got you started in doing these ratings and projection systems, and why is it important?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a really competitive guy. You know, as a former athlete, when sports betting kind of started getting popular, you know, outside of Nevada, and it was about 2017, I was like, okay, I want to get into this, but if I'm going to do something, like, I don't do things half-hearted. Like, I was like, I want to really be good at it. So, you know, it started just very kind of rudimentary, just pen and paper math, and then that just evolved into a spreadsheet, and now, you know, now I'm running scripts and things like that, and it's much more complicated in advance, but I love doing it. It's you know, obviously started as, like, a passion project, and now here we are.
Well, and for those who don't know, Tyler over at vsin.com covers not only WNBA, and you got an article up with your projections for tonight's two games, and you'll be doing that for the weekend. Or you already did that for the weekend as well, right, for Friday?
Friday's games are up,
yes. Yeah, so WNBA, NFL, college football, men's and women's college basketball. Tyler covers all of those for us over at vsin.com. Awesome. And Tyler, you were part of our NFL betting guide, which Stormy just talked about in the intro here to this segment, and you looked at the NFC South. And in fact, I just realized, or maybe you did this, you know, on purpose, you're kind of dressed in Atlanta Falcons colors there, buddy. So what do you think about the Falcons for this season?
Yeah, that, obviously that's why I did it. There's no chance I just realized that 3 seconds ago that I look like I'm cheering for the Falcons. Yeah, so my numbers are really high on the Falcons. I mean, their power rating has increased each of the last 2 years, and obviously they're going to have an upgrade at the quarterback position this year, moving on from Desmond Ridder, bringing in Kirk Cousins, and then, you know, the head-scratching decision to draft Michael Penix. So we'll see what happens there. But I think either one of those guys would be an upgrade over Desmond Ridder. So I do think the Falcons are absolutely the favorite to win the division and go over their win total.
When you broke down their schedule as well, for this Atlanta team, is there anything that stood out to you from that standpoint as well?
Yeah, their strength of schedule is dead last in the NFL. So, you know, when you're looking at a season win total bet, not only do you want to look at a team's power rating and go from there, but the strength of schedule has to matter. So I've got them above average from a power rating standpoint and bottom of the league in terms of their strength of schedule. So that's a good recipe for an over bet.
Well, this is a team that, I mean, defensively, they weren't bad last year. But to your point, you know, the big upgrades on offense, that's something that should help them. And, of course, you know, we'll see what Raheem Morris does in his first year. Another first-year head coach in this division, Tyler, the Carolina Panthers. Dave Canales comes over, was the OC of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He inherits a team that, to be completely honest, was not good at all last year. Do you expect Carolina to take a little bit of a step up in year two of Bryce Young?
I do. I'm really excited to see this Dave Canales, Bryce Young kind of combo, because everywhere Dave Canales has been, he's elevated the quarterback play there, whether that was Geno Smith or Baker Mayfield. So I'm very curious to see what he does with Bryce Young. Now, that being said, the Panthers still are dead last in my power ratings. They're not going to be a good team. However, I do think their season win total 4.5 is still a little bit low. I've got them more around 6 wins. So I do think they're going to be bad, but they might not be, like, historically bad going under a 4.5 win total.
Well, and so since that win total, I feel like a lot of shops has ticked up from the 4.5 to 5.5. Then if your projection is 6, you still feel comfortable with that win total getting adjusted.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not something that I love. I wouldn't, you know, be running to the window to bet a Panthers over, but if I had to make a pick, I definitely would be on the over there.
So a couple of teams that, you know, I mean, have had varying levels of success. One that's had a lot of success over the last few years is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, I know that you kind of mentioned this in your write-up that Baker Mayfield is not really a guy that you trust. But again, this is a team that has the best of the track records here out of the NFC South. So what are you thinking for the Buccaneers this year?
Yeah, this is a team, a really veteran team. I kind of lump them and the Saints together a little bit in terms of how I see them. I think they're both really high floor teams. So I don't think they're going to win 4 or 5 games, obviously, but I also don't know how high those teams' ceilings are. So, you know, I think they're probably going to be, I think the win total is pretty close to where it should be. I think they're probably going to be between 7 and 9 wins, just kind of mediocre. This NFC South, you know, as a whole, if I had to just categorize the whole division, it's just very mid. They're all, you know, you average out their power ratings and they're just kind of average. They're not as bad as they've been in years past. This division's been pretty weak in years past. I don't think it's going to be like that, but it's not the AFC North.
Yeah. Well, obviously Kirk Cousins' addition to the Falcons made them the odds on favorite and things shifted a lot more in their favor, but still, like, as I've talked about this division with Michael Lombardi and others, they've called it a dartboard division. Just kind of throw a dart at times for who it could be.
Yep.
The Saints in our guide, as you know, everybody went through and picked their division selections. Aside from the Falcons, the Saints were the next highest pick for everybody to go. Their defense, I know we all expect to be good again. They were a 9-win team last year. But I think a lot of your betting on New Orleans would depend on how you feel about Derek Carr and that offense. What was your evaluation there?
Yeah, I mean, that you're absolutely right. I think their season, their ceiling hinges on how well Derek Carr plays. And I think even more to the point, I think how well the offensive line plays. Because, you know, I mentioned yesterday on Sharp Money, they've got some. I mean, Alvin Kamara still a good productive running back. They've got Chris Olave. I mean, they've got some pieces, but the offensive line's been so bad they haven't been able to really get anything going offensively. And again, Derek Carr again, kind of mid. So you know, we'll see what they get out of him. But I do think if they can protect him, I do think he's solid enough with the pieces they have that they can put together a good season.
To Stormy's point, 15 of the 21 people polled in our NFL betting guide did take the Falcons to win this NFC South, 5 taking the Saints, and 1 very, very brave soul.
Wes Reynolds.
Taking the Carolina Panthers to be. And look, I mean, in the NFL, we do get a worst to first on an almost annual basis. So I don't know if it can be Carolina, but as you mentioned, a brave soul.
I think most people thought, you know, Cincinnati could go from worst to first. Right. Maybe if you want to get real, real jazzy, you take the Chargers in the AFC West under Jim Harbaugh. I don't know if anybody other than Wes thought the Panthers. But hey, if you're going to swing, you're swinging in July, right? So like, let's have fun with it.
That's a good point. And speaking of swinging in July, Tyler, you know, obviously putting together the model that you have, the Tissue Index, you are able to project out every line for every week in the NFL. And there is a week one bet that caught your eye here. And in fact, it's in the first game of the season.
Yeah, it's Ravens Chiefs. Ravens are my number one power rated team coming into this year. I'm much lower on the Chiefs than the market. And I think the root of that is their power rating each of the last couple of years has taken a dip in the TSI. And I think it's because they've got what I call championship fatigue. Like, I think them winning and contending for championships year after year just kind of wears on you mentally and physically, and you kind of have to just slog through the regular season sometimes. So I think we're going to see value here this season, you know, on a week-to-week basis, betting against the Chiefs for the most part. So I anticipate seeing a lot of value betting against the Chiefs this year.
Also, with your point on the Ravens, I was looking at the guide. We both have the same Super Bowl matchup, but you have the Ravens beating my 49ers, which did cause me a little bit of physical pain. Last 30 seconds here before we let you go. Are you a hot dog eating contest person? Do you enjoy that, or are you grossed out like Adam here?
It's pretty gross.
Dang it. I'm on an island myself here.
It's again the soaking them in water is the difficult thing for me.
Yeah,
the water doesn't bother me. It's the whatever that red is. It fruit punch? Is it Powerade? I don't know. That's the only thing that makes me uncomfortable. How are you spending the rest of the holiday? What are you doing next?
I'm heading to Stadium Swim here at Circa.
Living the dream, Tyler Shoemaker. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you. Great job with all of your contributions in the guide. And I don't know how you and Adam both cover a zillion sports the way that you do, but we all are so grateful. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, VSiN host of The Handle, Mike Somich, is going to stop by on the Progressive Guest Line. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Stormy Bonantoni is here, but I'm Adam Burke filling in for Michael Lombardi today, the managing editor over at VSiN.com. And every day is a great day to go to VSiN.com, but especially today, go over there, become a VSiN Pro subscriber, get your copy of our 2024 NFL betting guide. Even if you just want to look around, though, we got best bets. We got DraftKings betting splits that are updated every 5 minutes. You can check out the odds by state. We have plenty of betting tools. We have all kinds of betting guides. You can check out previous editions of our guides as well. A lot happening over at VSiN.com. And our redesign earlier this year made it more mobile friendly, optimized for mobiles. Check it out over at VSiN.com.
If you haven't gone to VSiN.com yet, what are you doing? Now's the time.
What are you doing? Next year, we'll have a hot dog eating contest article from Stormy Bonantoni.
Yours truly. Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of the hot dog eating contest, by the way, our wonderful producer, Elliot Bowman, looked up on Food Network how long it takes to actually cook these hot dogs. Because you were asking the question, you were kind of disturbed at the thought process of how long they might be sitting there for. Apparently, they serve all 1,000 hot dogs relatively fresh. They start cooking at 12 Eastern and takes about 40 minutes to cook. So they're ready for that 12:40 start time. Only 40 minutes. Not bad at all.
That's not bad at all. Yeah. I mean, it makes me really question the people eating dollar hot dogs at a ball game that were made, you know, 18 hours before the game started.
Well, if you don't want the article from me, we can probably get Mike Somich reeled in write this article next year because he's got a hot dog guy. Mike Somich joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, host of The Handle here on VSiN and DraftKings Network every Saturday and Sunday beginning at 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. You can follow him on X at SambaBomb18. And you cashed a ticket today during the contest. What'd we have, Mike?
Yeah, I ended up with a breaking even on the hot dog contest. Okay. Didn't have Bertoletti to win. Big price there. 10-1 at some places. This was his ninth contest, by far his best score. I had the over on Webb, so he went over that total for me. So I ended up pushing on the hot dog eating contest. So not a bad start to the day. We got the Astros out early, and I think I might get involved in some Twins in-game here. I'm down 1-0 to the Tigers right now. I like their chances to come back there.
I like that. We got bets from Mike Somich. I mean, it's July 4th, right? He's all over the hot dog eating contest. He's all over the baseball slate.
Before we get too into the baseball, though, I need to answer the question. We have to ask everybody this question because sure. I didn't realize how opinionated people were about their hot dogs. But for you, Mike, what is the proper way to eat a hot dog? What do we have on it?
I'm not a big condiment guy, so I want a well-done hot dog. I like on the grill with a little bit of burntness to it. And then you put a nice dill pickle next to it inside the bun, and that is all you need. Just a hot dog, dill pickle, good bun, and you are good to go.
I can't get on board with the dill pickle.
Pickle
thing.
In the bun? I don't think I've seen people. Well, I've heard relish.
I am so repulsed by the taste of pickles that when I go out to eat, if I think a pickle is going to be on the plate, I tell the waitress I am allergic to pickles. Just so I don't get
one. Wow, so you're a liar too. Yikes. Wow. No.
That's true. I outed myself on that one.
So you don't like condiments in general? Like ketchup, no shot.
No shot. No ketchup on fries, hamburgers, nothing. No mayonnaise, no mustard. I'm an anti-condiment person. Every now and then I'll mess with some barbecue sauce. I like buffalo sauce on wings. But like sandwiches, hot dogs, hamburgers, no condiments for me. Just give me some good pickles, nice lettuce, nice tomato. We're good to go.
I will say ketchup on meatloaf is a different beast than on a hot dog.
How often are you eating meatloaf, though?
A couple times a month.
Yeah, a couple times a month?
Yeah.
That's like a once a year, maybe.
Why? You know what is great with meatloaf?
What?
Throw some dill pickles on there. And you'll love it.
Meanwhile, I was going to say watching Wedding Crashers. Ma, the meatloaf. Let's shift gears from food to baseball, though. Obviously, we've got a loaded slate. You said you're thinking about getting it on in-game. There's also a handful of games coming up later on tonight and early this afternoon. What's your favorite bet of the day this 4th of July?
Oh, man. Well, you know, 4th of July, hot dogs. When you're talking Mike Somich and baseball, it's all about J.P. Sears Day. And he's pitching today for the Athletics. Love this spot for the A's here. I took them first five, minus a half run, plus 115. Big part of this, Cap, is that the Angels are going to be throwing out a bullpen game. They've got Contreras on the mound. Well, Contreras faced this Angels team just 1 week ago in his last start. So this is a perfect setup for me here where, you know, a lot of times in these bullpen games, you don't have that lineup seeing that bullpen pitcher, specifically the first one that's going to throw. Well, the Athletics saw him. He pitched three innings against them. They did cover the first five, won 1-0 there as well. I love the fact that we're going to have Contreras having to face this Athletics team right after pitching against them prior, and you get J.P. Sears, the lefty on the hill for the Oakland, one of my favorite pitchers to bet. So we're going to lay the half run first five with the A's here, plus 115.
Well, and to your point, Mike, I almost got on this one with Oakland, but the Angels, over the last 30 days, 26th in weighted on base average against left-handed pitching. So they do struggle in that split. Sears, a lefty going for the A's here today. Staying out there on the West Coast, another play that you like, Baltimore and Seattle. Been a really interesting series here so far up in the Pacific Northwest. What is it that you're looking at in this Corbin Burnes and Bryce Miller matchup?
I like both of these pitchers, and when I like the two pitchers, and we're playing in Seattle, and generally a park you're going to see more unders in, I'm going to try and fade the offenses a little bit here. Let's go under first five innings. You can get under four right now at minus 115. So we're going to go under four here. I think Burnes has success against a Mariners lineup that has struggled at times. And Miller, on the other hand, he's been up and down this season. We've seen some very good starts, some poor starts, but he's been better at home so far. So I'll trust Bobby Miller at home and Burnes on the hill here for the O's. I think they both can shut down these offenses or at least limit them. And then we'll see what happens when we get to the bullpens. But I'm more interested in just playing the first five here. Focus on the starting pitchers. See if we can get that under four home first five in the O's and the M's.
Total for the game sitting 7. Orioles on the money line. Full game minus 142. Looking to so this is a prop that you have found, oftentimes mispriced. And I feel like every day you go through the slate and you're able to find one that's just wrong. What did you find today in the Royals game today?
I love me this prop. I've only found it on DraftKings. It's will the home team bat in the bottom of the ninth. So essentially an adjusted money line in a lot of ways because you're not laying the run and a half. You're also not taking the regular money line price. And over the last couple of weeks, I played a lot of favorites in this spot, right? So you have someone who is laying minus 230, but you can get them to bat in the bottom of the ninth. No, at around minus 145, right? So you're saving significant amount of juice, in that case, about 85 cents. Well, the other spot I think it's quite valuable is like when you have these close line games, and in Tampa Bay, Kansas City today, pretty closely line game, minus 125 on Tampa, plus 105 on the Royals. If you like the dog, I love the idea of taking bat in the bottom of the ninth, no, in a lot of these spots, because you're going to see a significantly juiced price on that plus money. So right now, the Royals sitting there plus 105 with Marsh on the hill, but to bat in the bottom of the ninth, no, they are plus 155. So you add 50 cents of juice with the bet that they will win in 8.5 innings, essentially. So to me, this is a spot where I think that I like, well, first of all, I like the Royals in this game. Eflin pitched well last time out, but struggled the four prior outings, giving up multiple earned runs in each of those. So I want to try and play against the Rays here. Royals, quietly one of the better home teams in baseball. They're 31-17 at home so far this season. I want to take a piece of the Royals here, and I want to try and find the best possible value on that. And to me, taking the plus 155, will they bat in the bottom of the ninth? No, is significantly better than just taking plus 105 here for the Royals. So we're going to take a little bit more of a shot here. Say the Royals will not bat in the bottom of the ninth, get that plus 155. If you're looking for that prop, you got to go to the game props. You go click on the game inside DraftKings, go to game props, scroll about 75-80% of the way down, and you'll see will that home team bat in the bottom of the ninth. It's readily available for every single game. It's a great way to try and take advantage of some of these favorites that are laying too much juice, or dogs that you want to get a better price on by betting that they will not bat in the bottom of the ninth.
So I actually tweeted about this on Tuesday, Mike. I don't know if you saw it or not, but we've been talking about it a little bit here over the last couple of days when I've been filling in on Sharp Money, and I'll mention it here on the show as well. As you mentioned, the Royals, 31-17 at home. They are 17-23 on the road. And if you look at their home-road offensive splits, they basically hit like the Orioles at home and like the White Sox on the road. And I don't know if there's something nefarious, if there's some shenanigans going on at Kauffman Stadium, but I will say this. I don't think that the sports books have, or the market have really picked up on just how good Kansas City's been at home, Mike.
Yeah, it's tough to quantify why. And I think that's a big part of the reason, right? You're generally not going to see that large of a split from the home versus the road. And so you have to decide, hey, am I going to trust the stats and just believe that their offense is just that much better at Kauffman Stadium? Not one of those parks where you can really build your lineup to. You know, you have some places like Yankee Stadium, you got Short Porch, you got Boston with the Monster. You're like, oh, we can build a lineup around it and create a better offense at home. That's not the case with Kauffman Stadium, but the numbers don't really lie. And the sample size has gotten to the point where I'm willing to trust it, especially if I'm getting a significantly better price or what I believe is not a fair price on the Royals because of how good they've been at home. So one of those situations where I can't really quantify why that offense has been so much better, but they have, and you can't really argue that they haven't. So at this point in the season, you kind of have to say, okay, I don't think it's due for regression. I'm going to trust that they're the better team at home. And when I get a number specifically on the Royals at home, I want to find a way to take advantage of it. And that's the case today.
Mike, you're awesome. Thanks as always for your insight, pal. Have a great holiday.
You got it. Happy 4th of July. Adam, just try a pickle on a hot dog.
Just do it for me.
God, I don't even want to eat a pickle ever, let alone on a hot dog.
I don't see anything wrong with the pickle, but yeah, the putting it in the bun is definitely something I haven't heard before. Mike Somich, everybody, by the way, if you haven't already, make sure you check out the handle every weekend here on VSiN and DraftKings Network, and you can follow him on X at SambaBomb18. We also got a tweet coming in from the palm readers. It said, am I the only one that's completely anti-hot dog? He said, I'll eat sausages or brats, not hot dogs. Call me elitist, but I'll leave the hot dogs for the five-year-old. I am a five-year-old. I love hot dogs. But that's a conversation we hadn't had yet. Brats and sausages, top tier.
Oh, absolutely. A brat or a good Italian sausage off the grill, way, way, way better than a hot dog.
That is something, like, I mean, I eat a lot of hot dogs every year, but every time that my dad comes in town and we're, like, putting a spread on for football Sunday, we are always cooking brats and hot Italian sausages, like, number one. Okay, we got to hit the break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears to college football. This past week marked the official move for a number of teams into their new respective conferences. Which are poised for success? And which might struggle. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. This thing is jam-packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter this year, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and new head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, the prop betting guide, and of course, best futures bets from our VSiN experts and analysts, including awards markets like MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to more informed bets this season. Head to VSiN.com/guide to get your copy now. That's VSIN.com/guide. Adam Burke, who put that whole guide together, in for Michael Lombardi today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. As we are live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, but from the NFL, we're going to get into a little college football talk here because this has been one of the more transformative off seasons for the sport. In addition to some coaching ripple effects at the top, where three of the four head coaches for teams that were in the college football playoff last year are no longer on those specific teams. The transfer portal is active as ever, and 15 FBS schools are and have changed conferences this summer. If you include the four Sun Belt changes in 2022 and 14 more FBS moves last year, that's 33 teams that have changed leagues since Texas and Oklahoma announced that they were going into the SEC. That's nearly a quarter of the sport, which has also grown, by the way, from 130 to 134 teams. So there is a lot, if you are researching college football, trying to prepare for the season, to dive into.
Yeah, and we will have our college football betting guide out August 1st here at VSiN. So that'll be our next big publication. I'm sending out assignments tomorrow to the people that will be writing up the conferences, writing up our feature articles, all of that. So August 1st, if you're not yet a VSiN Pro subscriber, definitely make sure you are by August 1st, because as Stormy said, a lot of transition, a lot of turnover. Obviously, the transfer portal is something that's very hard to keep up on. But the conference realignment, you know, the expanded playoff this year, too, a lot of talking points for college football that you'll want to know about. So August 1st, that guide drops.
And here this segment, we'll dive into a few of the big conferences and the major changes. But before we do that, I do just want to ask you, as you dive into your college football prep, what are typically the priorities, the things that you're looking for? I know you typically tend to be somebody that likes some of these smaller conferences as well that you can hone in into. What advice do you have early on?
Yeah, so I mean, I like the smaller conferences a lot of times because people don't really know those players as well, you know, and also, I mean, it's one of those things where a couple of star players on a team can really, really change the dynamic of that team and make them, you know, kind of stand out in their respective conference. But it is one of those things that now, because there's so much roster turnover, obviously a lot of coaching and coordinator turnover as well, it may be isn't as quote unquote sharp, I guess, to be looking at those, you know, Sun Belt and AAC and, you know, Conference USA types of teams, because every team just looks significantly different at this point in time. So that is something I do look at. I do power rate all, what is it, 134, 135 mm-hmm. teams this year. I think Kennesaw State moving up to FBS this year. I do power rate all of the teams. I have to go through that. I put together all the team schedules and then project out my season win total numbers for those teams. So I have to do that here in the month of July. And the other thing is, you know, I have to adjust my home field advantage calculations, which I typically do based on a 3 and 5 year sample of a team straight up and against the spread at home. But now you've got all these new conference mm-hmm. members where these teams are going to be logging a lot more air miles. You were talking about UCLA's schedule during the break. And also, you know, you're going to be playing in places you never really played in before. So home field advantage may have a little bit more weight to it this season than it has in past seasons.
Yeah, UCLA, they're definitely going to be racking up plenty of air miles this year. They start the season with a trip to Hawaii. They've got road trips at Rutgers, LSU, Penn State, Nebraska, Washington. They're going to be all over the place, in addition to already trying to figure out this new world without their head coach, Chip Kelly, who leaves for a coordinator job in the same conference now in the Big Ten, which is very different. And let's start there in the Big Ten with some of their change. Add some big dogs from the Pac-12 in Oregon, USC, Washington, which of course is going to take a step back from having just played in a national championship with Kalen DeBoer and a mass exodus of players there. But Jed Fish takes over for DeBoer at Washington and UCLA. Oregon is certainly, though, a team that immediately looks like they're going to be a contender in the Big Ten.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for one thing, I think Dan Lanning is maybe now the best coach in the country. He's certainly a top five head coach for me. And he brings in Dylan Gabriel, a transfer from Oklahoma and also played at UCF. So he's got another experienced starting quarterback to run this offense. And yeah, Bo Nix is a loss. And of course, they had some other losses at the skill positions as well. But you still have that experienced guy in Gabriel to kind of run your offense here. So that definitely gives Oregon a little bit of a leg up. Also, the Ducks do play Ohio State in Eugene. That's going to be obviously a huge game for both of those teams. And, you know, I think people are going to kind of complain, although the regular season is diminished now with the 12-team playoff. It's not, because of these super conferences that we have where these games really truly matter. And for Oregon, they do have some of their bigger games at home, including that Ohio State game. So they certainly look ready to step into that conference and be very, very dynamic. And look, when you think about the caliber of athletes that they're able to recruit, when you look at the Big Ten, it's really been Ohio State who's been the only team that's kind of had that sort of recruiting pipeline, especially at, you know, say the wide receiver position. So Oregon's dynamic, I think, plays really well in this conference, where a lot of the middle tier teams, they're not going to be able to keep up with the Ducks at all.
Yeah, that game, by the way, at Autzen Stadium on October 12th, Oregon and Ohio State, two of six teams in college football with the highest win totals across the board at 10.5. Georgia is your national championship favorite at plus 320, but Ohio State's there at 4-1, Texas plus 750, and Oregon right there at plus 850. The Big 12 is also interesting. 16 teams now, as they lose Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. They add Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and Arizona State, a team I do not have high hopes for, but one that I do is this Utah Ute squad. I think they could win the Big 12 in their first year, plus 320 the price.
Yeah, and this is one where, you know, you look at a team like Utah, and the Big 12 is not exactly known for physical play. It's not really known for physical play on offense or defense. And Utah is a team under Kyle Whittingham that has always, always been extremely good in the trenches. And with a lot of Big 12 teams, you know, the trench play, the play at the line of scrimmage can be very hit or miss, just to put it nicely. So, yeah, I think it is something where Utah definitely has a little bit of a leg up. Also, it's going to be really interesting for these teams in the Big 12 that typically don't play in elevation, because now you've got Utah, right? So you got some elevation there in Salt Lake City. Tucson, it's only about 2,400 feet in elevation, but still, it's, you know, a place that you're not really accustomed to going to, playing the Arizona Wildcats. Obviously, Boulder, you know, going to Colorado, you have to play in some elevation there. So, you know, for the teams that do have to make road trips to some of these new member schools, I think that'll be kind of fascinating to see how that plays out, where, you know, they're not used to really playing in elevation, and now they're going to have to, you know, maybe a couple of times a year.
And we talked about it yesterday, too. The home field advantage specifically at Rice-Eccles Stadium out there in Salt Lake City is significant. They were 6-1 at home last year. Their lone loss to Oregon when Utah was on a third-string quarterback at the time. They're 18-1 the last three full seasons and 27-2 the last 5 years at home.
Well, and I think the other thing for a program like Utah, right, as you mentioned, and as we were joking about during the break, you're almost always high on Utah. Right?
Yes.
As you should be. I mean, Utah is a very,
stay
very
healthy, and you're going to win everything.
Right. They're a very, very well-run program. Kyle Whittingham is an outstanding head coach. I know he's been, you know, very kind to bettors as well from an against the spread standpoint. But are they a top four team in the country? No. They're not going to be able to really be a top four team all that often, right? They might have an outlier season, something like that. As a program that's really good, but not top five caliber, you could definitely see a path in which they are a top 15 type of team, mm-hmm. and now they actually have a chance to make the playoff, right? So that's going to help from a recruiting standpoint. That's going to help coming into the season with the preparation and game planning. So now you've got teams that are really good but not great that are going to have aspirations to actually make the playoff, and they can actually do it.
Plus 220 for Utah to make the playoffs, but I would say make the playoff and potentially have home field advantage in a home playoff game as well, which, again, going back to the numbers we just stated, would be significant for a program like Utah. Let's hit the ACC here real quickly as well, up to 17 members, although Clemson and FSU are, you know, trying to sue the league and get out of it, so we'll see what happens with that in the near future. But the addition of SMU, Cal, and Stanford, SMU 16-1 there in the league, their win total set at 8. Very favorable schedule. And for a team that was 11-3 last year and brings back their quarterback, yes, he got injured at the end of the year, but he'll be back healthy. Preston Stone could be a breakout star in the ACC this year, I think.
Yeah, and again, I mean, when you look at the AAC from last year where SMU played, and then you compare it to the ACC, Tulane would be a pretty good team in the ACC. UTSA would be a good team in the ACC. I think Memphis would be a team that could definitely hold their own. So while I think, you know, teams like Oregon and Washington, I think they're to some degree maybe stepping up a little bit going into the Big Ten where you get Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, stuff like that, I don't really think SMU is actually stepping up that much in class, because
yeah,
the ACC is just not very good. And as you mentioned, a very, very favorable schedule for the Mustangs. The other thing about the ACC that's going to take a lot of getting used to, Cal and Stanford, members of the ACC. And you talk about, you know, frequent flyer miles and travel. It's going to be rough for them over the next couple of years to make that adjustment.
No question about it. To go back to SMU's schedule real quickly, even if they lose their toughest non-conference game, TCU, and lose to FSU and Louisville, the rest of the schedule, extremely manageable. I think 9 wins is right there for the taking. While the AAC loses SMU, they did add Army as a football-only member. Conference USA, as you referenced, will add Kennesaw State from FCS. Missouri State will also join next season, and next season UMass will join the MAC. So the conference realignment didn't end here.